RSN, Kilo Oscar 4, Romeo Sierra November.
For RSN, this is KO 4 JKB.
KO 4 JKB, this is Anderson. Could you put signal report? I'm not sure. Coming in, I'm on a 5.
First, do up your call sign, you're clear as a bell. And right now, you got some picket fencing going on and some bacon frying in the background. When you first chimed in, you sounded good, and now there's a little static.
Right, is that any better?
Just about right in between the two transmissions there, a little better.
Moving around a parking lot, I was thinking I was going to get a better position, but I should be back about where I was.
You're totally readable. How are you doing this evening?
Doing all right. Just cruising around for work and got a little lull, so I figured I'd hop on the radio and see who was on. I figured the Yupa Garag chew runs till about midnight or later sometimes. I figured there'd be people on and I'd be competing for some space.
It's a Thanksgiving weekend, so the check-ins were a little lower than normal, but, I don't know if you heard the end of it, the rag chew portion. We were trying to help someone with their signal and stuff. That was fun to listen to, but, Thanksgiving weekend, but I had a good Thanksgiving. How was your weekend?
My family works my side of the family works a rather hectic schedule, kind of like I do, so we actually kind of did our Thanksgiving 2 Sundays ago. It was the best time that everybody had time off from work and could get together on my side of the family. My wife's side of the family, we got together yesterday, so we did our thing yesterday. It was kind of nice, but all in all, it's been all right.
My wife and I, our family lives a couple hundred miles away in each direction, so we always have what they call a Friendsgiving, where we just have, friends that are kind of in the same situation, and we all just get together and we cook a, traditional Thanksgiving meal, the bird and all the trimmings, so that went okay, and even made a little fire in the backyard. And that's about it. And, so that's good. Good to hear from you.
All right, I didn't catch your first name again.
Duncan, like Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah, I was thinking something totally different. Thought I might have heard something totally different, but that's definitely not what I heard. But, well, it's good to talk to you, Duncan. I don't think I have ever heard you on this repeater. Do you get on it often?
I took it about a year ago, and since about a year ago, I check in just about 4 out of 7 days a week onto this net every night.
Okay. Yeah, I'm down in Anderson. Like, I'm probably less or about a mile from downtown. I used to always listen to this repeater, but never really talked on it because I didn't figure I could get into it very well, but... I figured I could back when I had my 50-watt mobile. I figured I could get into it okay, but definitely now pretty much all I have is 5-watt HT because I moved the mobile rig into the house when I got my shack set up. But to my surprise, I usually get in quite well on a 5-watt HT, so I've kind of been talking on it a lot more. Good, because our Anderson repeaters just don't get a whole lot of activity.
I've been checking into the Anderson net, not that much, but once in a while, the one on Sassafras Mountain. I'm just, I know I'm a far ways away from Asheville, but I got a good kind of southern exposure view. But I'm curious, your mobile rig, you said you had an HT and an antenna. What kind of antenna do you have?
Sorry, I had our dispatch get on the radio. Didn't know if that was something I needed to hear or not. But my work vehicle. I have, so in either case, I use a Yaesu FT3 is my radio that I move between my personal vehicle and my work vehicle. On my personal vehicle, I have a Larson, I think it's the NMO 270B antenna. It's roof mounted on an NMO, like a drilled NMO mount. On my work vehicle, obviously can't do that. So I use the Diamond K400 lip mount with a, I forget the antenna, it's a Comet, I think. It's a little 28-inch, I forget the model number, but it is considerably shorter and lower profile than my Larson, but it performs extremely well.
I'm just curious, the antenna that you're using now, is it, you said it's an NMO mount, but how is it mounted? So I'm just, because I'm thinking about the, you know, the ground plane and all the properties and that stuff. And that, is it on top, is it like a magnetic NMO adapter type of thing, or is it fastened some way, like in the hood or in the hatchback?
I forgot to go into that. So I'm in my work vehicle now, so yeah, it's mounted to the edge of the trunk lip. It's the Diamond K400 lip mount. They kind of have that little triple axis thing where you can kind of tilt it however you need to. It's not like some of the lip mounts where it's just you put it on there and what you got is what you got. So if your hood or trunk or whatever is angled at a 45 degree angle, then your antenna is going to be angled that way. These, on the other hand, if you have to put it on, you can actually mount it on a vertical surface and then turn it totally up sideways. You can tilt it any way you need to. But anyway, it's on, I'm in a Dodge Charger, so it's on the edge of the trunk lip. So most of my ground plane, I don't know if the Dodge Chargers have on the rear fender, have a pretty large surface past the trunk lip. Around the fender that provides a good ground plane if it's grounded to the trunk. I'm not sure how well that is, but that's why just now I was trying to turn to get most of my trunk surface towards the repeater so I'd have good radiation that way, but apparently it works better if I'm the opposite way.
Certainly making the trip just fine. Yeah, there's, you know, there's a little static, but that's, you know, goes with the territory. And my mobile stuff, I use HTs in my mobiles. I just take my handy talkie in my car or my wife's car. And on both vehicles, they have the same exact antenna, which is the Nagoya, I think it's the UV, I don't know, it's not the 771, that's the mobile one, but it's the same dual band VHF, UHF antenna that just mag mounted. And seems to work fine. I tried to talk the wife into getting a bigger antenna on her car. She's like, no way. So that seems to work out for us. And the antenna that you're using sounds great. Sounds good.
I think I've seen the one you had because I think I was originally going to do that. And then I just decided to pull the trigger and drill a hole in my roof on my personal vehicle. But I think it's the Nagoya 72, I think is the model number. I can't remember what the letters are before that, but I think it's the 72, that's the mag mount. Yeah, this one, it's a Comet, and I know the number 680 are somewhere in the model number, and then, I don't know, I can't keep up with a lot of these antennas because they have, like, a ton of letters and then random numbers and then more letters, but I know 680 is somewhere in there, and it's designed to be a low profile, so the bottom couple inches is like a pretty solid shaft, and then it has a loading coil a few inches up, and then the rest of the antenna is a super fine, very low profile width, and at one time I had it mounted on the hood of my Jeep, and with the same Diamond K400 lip mount, and it's low profile enough it almost looked like the factory radio antenna.
The Nagoya antenna is like the something new, something 72, exactly. And they make a GMRS version. I think they just put a G after that. But, it works for me pretty good. My wife, she doesn't want to get her license, so I got her a GMRS radio, and that Nagoya works just as good on GMRS than it does UHF, VHF, so yeah, that's a really good, cheap antenna to throw on and not make your wife mad.
I actually didn't discover GMRS until, obviously everybody grew up having the little bubble back radios, and I think I had a GMRS radio that was like the 5-watt, supposedly you had to have a license to use them, but that was long before I knew anything about it. But I didn't truly discover GMRS until after I'd already gotten into ham radio, which wasn't long. I've only been doing this since July, and I got my GMRS license before I got my ham license, but I was already studying for my ham license before I, kind of fell into GMRS. But I've actually come to appreciate it just as much as I have ham. And I gotta say, I love watching. I don't know if you watch Randy's videos, Not a Rubicon. He's got some super entertaining videos for his radios.
And yeah, I love Randy, Not a Rubicon. I noticed that he has where you can get on Zello and monitor his repeater. So I'm actually been monitoring his repeater, so that's kind of cool. But yeah, I really got into GMRS just to get my wife connected with me in case something happens. But I'm studying from a general. I actually have my book right here, the big spiral bound blue book. I'm going to take my test next Saturday in Marion. Hope it all works well. But big fan of Not a Rubicon.
More or less why I got it, because I could get my license and my wife could legally get on the radio. Because, if I haven't suggested it to her to try and get her ham license, she takes pretty much no interest in anything that I do radio related. As a matter of fact, pretty much rolls her eyes anytime she sees the radio come out. But we have kind of picked up camping. We went on our first real camping trip up in Oconee last weekend. So we go with my parents and some friends and stuff, and I'm wanting to try and get a mobile type repeater set up for when we go. And my kids aren't quite old enough to do radios yet, but they're gonna soon get into it. So that was more or less what got me into it.
Medium.
KG4WZM, KO4RSN, go ahead.
And I don't want to completely interrupt your conversation and everything. KJ4WZM, Kilo Juliet 4, Whiskey Zulu Mike. My name's Daniel. When you get done talking with him, with Duncan, I would be interested in asking you some questions about GMRS. I've long wondered about it, and I've never gotten into it. But I have a radio that is capable of doing it as well as ham.
Yeah, absolutely.
For JQB, come on in, Daniel, and talk about it. I'll sit back and listen. I'm loving just here learn new stuff.
And Daniel, not sure if you copied KO4RSN. My first name is Andrew, and you can go ahead with whatever you got.
RSN KJ4WZM. So the sum total of my knowledge about GMRS radios is that you have to pay roughly, I think it's $80 to $100 to get your license from the FCC. And I think it's either six or seven letters and numbers long, something like that. But each one is good for the entire household that you live in, to the best of my knowledge. Instead of it being one person, you can share it with whoever lives with you or something like that. It's just what I remember from looking into it before. And I do believe that their power limit is 50 watts, and I do believe that they have repeaters as well, but I'm curious as to how far the radios go and if there's actually people on there or if it's kind of empty.
Yeah, so, like I said, I'm down in Anderson. We have next to zero activity down here, so I'll speak to the activity part first. There is a repeater in Pickens County that I think covers a pretty wide area. I think it's on Glassy Mountain. I can't remember that. Don't quote me on that 100%. There's one somewhere in Greenville, and there's another in Asheville that you can actually hit from the upstate and talk on. But you are correct, the max power is 50 watts, and I'm going to let the repeater cycle real quick. So the way it works is channels 1 through 7, the max power is 5 watts. Channels 8 through 14, the max power is 2 watts. It used to be a half a watt. The FCC has increased it for FRS users to 2 watts. And then from channels 15 through 22, the max power is 50 watts. Again, most of your HTs are going to be 5 watts. And then, so the 1 through 22 is what your former and still exists FRS radios used to cover. Then GMRS added channels 23 through 30, which are your repeater channels. So basically, just like 70 centimeters, you have a plus 5 megahertz offset when you transmit, so it transmits 5 megahertz higher. That's the way GMRS works as well. So channels 23 through 30 are exactly 5 megahertz higher than 15 through 22, and they are the repeater output for 15 through 22.
I was not aware of that, so I guess I can add in 23 through 30 into my HT as well. That way I can listen. I definitely won't go keying up repeaters without a license or anything, but I was aware of the power limits for 1 through 9 or 10, I think it was, 1 through 9. And then all the way to channel 14, I was aware of those and the fact that FRS can share them. So as long as you're on low power, you can technically use your HT to do that. If you're on low enough power, mine transmits on 1 watt, 3 watt, 5 watt, and 7 watt. It's 1, 3, 5, and 6, though, on UHF instead of 7, is 6 watts.
Yeah, and then also with as far as the family or household member part of that, so it covers, I don't know all the family members that it covers. I know it covers pretty much anyone you would normally live in your house with, wife, kids. I believe it covers brothers and sisters. I think about the only person as far as the immediate family that it doesn't cover is cousins. I think it used to, and then the FCC took cousins out, but it does cover parents. And then, like, as far as brothers, sisters, parents, it doesn't matter if they live with you or not. So, like, I'm married, have kids, my parents don't live with me. They can still use my GMRS license because the FCC doesn't specify whether they have to live with you or not. But, Daniel, I apologize. I just got a call at work, and I'm going to have to take off real quick. But KO4RSN, I'll be clear on your final.
Out there, Andrew, be careful. I put two and two together. I now know what you do for work. I've listened to the conversation enough to figure that out. KO4RSN, KJ4WZM, be safe out there, man. Yep, he's still around. KJ4WZM.
KJ4WZM, this is KM4JKV. Yeah, I'm still around. Everything Andrew said was accurate. And I just wanted to add, you know, I'm not a big GMRS person, but I figured for your family members that don't want to get a license, it's good to get them, you know, a radio to be connected. And I've had luck with local repeaters. They're good, but they're, you know, they're max 50 watts, you know what I mean? So you got to really know where you're at.
And it's UHF instead of VHF. So I know at least on ham radio on 70 centimeters, the range for your power is greatly reduced as far as how far you can go versus how it is on 2 meters. Like the 610 machine goes a ridiculous distance. At least back in the day it used to. It used to have a much bigger range than what it does now. I'm not sure what has caused it to shrink over time, but it's nowhere near as good as what it used to be. But UHF, as far as I know, can't even hold a candle to it.
Pleased to know, what does the 610 repeater do? I guess, is it 100 watts?
It has 100 watts of power. It used to reach all the way to Charlotte, with the exception of a few miles near the North Carolina-South Carolina border on 85. It would go out there. It would reach almost all the way down to Atlanta, Georgia, almost all the way down to Columbia, and it reached Apache through certain areas in Tennessee as well. But it had a huge, huge footprint, and now it's kind of shrunk down some.
I'm wondering if it's still 100 watts, I wonder if the footprints didn't shrink or just maybe interest has gone down. I don't know. But because sometimes I will listen to the Mount Mitchell repeater, and there'll be people with, you know, just a lot of watts cranking out on VHF from, like, Myrtle Beach, and they'll get into there, not every day, but maybe once every couple months. So I don't know if it's just the interest, or I don't know if it's the footprint or how it shrunk. I'm not sure.
I personally reached it from Gastonia, North Carolina, on the mobile. Not mobile, actually, but on a handheld with a rubber duck antenna inside a truck going down the road. I've hit it from Gastonia before, not reliably, but I can make the repeater from there and hold on to a short conversation before it drops out again. I've made that from Gastonia on 7 watts before, so... with a good antenna, like a 5/8 wave and 50 to 100 watts of power, it shouldn't even be a problem.
And also, you know, I'm no expert. I'm still studying for my general, and I'm green behind the ears. But, repeaters are the same. Some have better receive capabilities and all that stuff. All the stuff that goes in underneath, so that has a big deal to do with it. But every time I take a trip, I go down to Florida or go to Ohio to see family. I plug in all the repeaters and I test them out. I don't talk to everybody, but I at least like to listen and see what's going on.
Pretty enjoyable. For a time, I drove over the road long distance. I did about 3,000 miles a week, and most of that was on the East Coast. I was able to catch quite a few repeaters up along the East Coast, but this one here is the most active one that I have ever used, actually. I haven't ever found another repeater busier than this one.
You say that you are driving trucks, and that's really cool. I actually thought about doing that myself in my old age in this economy. But since you are driving trucks, you got to be using that 11 meter CB. So how's CB? I just bought a little CB handheld just to monitor. But I'm curious to know, do you use a lot of CB when you're on the trucking?
I don't talk on it much because most of what they do is get in verbal fights and criticize each other's driving all day, and then they get in the truck stop at night and they just fuss at each other and carry on and fight over the radio, and I really don't care to listen to it. So mostly I actually talk on my phone on a Bluetooth headset a good bit of the day, and if traffic starts acting funny, I turn my radio up. I usually have it on, but I keep the volume lower most of the time to see if there's trouble up ahead. I'll monitor it for keywords or whatever. If they say, hey, come off of it up at mile such and so, then I start listening to see if it's like DOT or if it's a crash or something like that. So I listen to it a lot more than I talk on it, for the most part.
You can get super salty. But yeah, when you are driving, are you kind of local or regional? Do you got to go cross country? Because I thought that would be such a cool job.
Regional at first, and I'm local at this time. One of the biggest reasons I went local for now is I used to end up in big frustrations dealing with the office people. When I was out of state, they would micromanage me big time and then invent runs for me when they had promised that I'd have time off and things like that. So I told myself I'd drive local where I know that I can go home every day for sure, because I've had projects I've been trying to work on and I can't just be gone a week or two or more at a time. So I'm home for now until I get my projects done, and then I'm thinking about saving up my money and buying my own truck. That's probably the only way I'd go back to regional or long distance again. That way I can run my own schedule. I can choose to take this load and not choose to take that load, and I can choose to come home, and everybody else can just deal with it. It's the nicest way that I can say it over the radio. So that's what I'd like to do, because I did not like being micromanaged when I was under all of that time constraint, stress type stuff.
I never thought about that. I never thought that politics or whatever, the administrative stuff would overshadow the stress of just driving that rig through those narrow streets or whatever, getting your load where it needs to be. But yeah, if you're an owner-operator, that's the deal. And if you like driving, and if you're, you know, if you're young, you've got, you know, years ahead of you, get that rig and customize it. That sounds good, man. It sounds really fun.
Idea that I've been tossing around. I just started in on my footwork for this. I have figured out, I now have a couple years of driving underneath my belt with pretty much no incident. I had my first one the other day. I was driving a dump truck actually the other day and moved some stuff around in the cab while I was going on down the road, and the PTO is trigger happy in that truck. I don't drive it a lot because I don't really like that truck, and I usually drive a flatbed instead of the dump truck. But they were training somebody else on the flatbed that day, so I had the dump truck that guy normally drives, and the PTO engaged and the bed started going up, and I caught it just immediately as it started going up. But the trucks are so tall, it takes no time for them to reach up and hit things they have no business hitting. So I hit the bottom part of a traffic light, and that was my very first, I guess you could say, collision on my CDL. It was, I hit the green light of a traffic light, and I actually did stop and have a collision report filed and everything. I did it the right way instead of running. Everybody else had just left the scene, but I went ahead and did what I was technically supposed to do. So now I have that. I didn't get a ticket or anything, but there's a notation that I was involved in a collision. But but I'm thinking about getting my hazmat now that I've had a couple of years of pretty much no events behind the wheel, getting my hazmat and making a little more money.
And I tell you what, if every time I get, you know, exiting a parking lot and I see a big rig coming in, I just immediately just get ready to reverse. Let the men through. They're working. Give them space.
Sometimes finding people, I don't know, they sometimes pull way too far forward at an intersection, cross the center line, things like that, and then you got to make your turn and you can't finish your turn. And you just look at them, they look at you, and they're like, what, just move your truck through and don't hit my car. I'm like, I can't make that turn. So there's been a couple times when I've been working on driving through a turn and a driver pulls forward instead of backing up, pulls forward and making it impossible for me to make my turn. And I will, at that point, I'll literally just draw on the four-way, pull the parking brakes, and wait. I'm like, we can sit here all day. I get paid per hour, not per mile, so you can move that car, or we can just continue to sit here, because I have all day to wait. And eventually, they get the idea, and back up. I'll go as far forward as I can before it reaches the point of making contact with their vehicle, and then I'll just park it and wait. Because I can't back up. They can back up, and I can't, so I just wait. It's very frustrating, but I just try to sit there and be patient about it.
That is the classical definition of the standoff there. And, big truck versus small vehicle.
Yep. Hit him as much as I'd love to. I'm not going to hit him, but I'll wait. I can be a lot more patient than they can be.
Well, you know, there's so many people that just don't have situational awareness, and then you see a big truck, you know, coming into it, has his blinkers on, or her blinkers on, making the turn. You look behind you, look in your mirror, back up, we're all working together, let's try to get this done, get this person getting his load delivered. And but some people are just stubborn or just into their little, I don't know what's going on, but yeah, I'm always courteous and all that stuff, but that's one thing about being a truck driver. I bet you have to deal with a lot of that stuff.
It's a pretty fun job. I enjoy it. I'm really torn. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed welding just as much as I did truck driving, and I kind of miss welding in a way. But those are probably two of my most favorite jobs that I've ever had. The truck driving stuff, a lot of days it's honestly not too bad. Every once in a while, though, I'll notice it on my way to work. I'll see several drivers doing stupid things before I even get into a truck. I just see people doing stupid things. I'm like, oh, here we go. It's a stupid day today. Everybody drives dumb that day, and it's horrible, and it's all day long. The next day, it's fine. It's just one of those things, though. If I start seeing dumb drivers back-to-back, it's going to be one of those days. It's a dumb driver day. And then a few days in a row of pretty decent, not much stupidity, and then here we go, another day of it. And I just don't know why it does that. Same people on the road every day, but why are we more intelligent on one day and less intelligent on another? I don't know. On those bad days, there's lots of wrecks. And on the not-so-bad days, hardly any.
Yeah, that's understandable. I mean, you never know who you're behind or who's behind you. You don't know what kind of day they had. They could have had a horrible day, or they're just, I don't know, got a new car, want to see how fast it goes. But the job of driving trucks, that's one thing you want to nurture, because I tell you, this country is needing truck drivers, and that's a good paying job. And especially if you stick in with it and you get your own truck where you're an owner operator, now you're making doctor's wages. So I commend you, brother, there. That's good. I always wanted to be a truck driver. I think I'm definitely too old. I fall asleep from a drive from here to Hendersonville, so I couldn't imagine me driving cross country. But yeah, that's awesome. I really respect that. KO4JKP.
KJ4WZM. Funny story here. So I am 27 years old, and I get into a whole bunch of different stuff. One of the things that I used to do more of back when I had more time than what I do now, I used to ride bicycles a lot, and I used to ride my bicycle from here in Travelers Rest to downtown Asheville, eat in Asheville, and drive and ride my bicycle back, get something to eat in Flat Rock, and drive it ride it the rest of the way home. That was one of my trips that I did sometimes, and another one was drive my vehicle with my bicycle to Arden, then that Walmart near I-40 and stuff in Arden. I'd park at that Walmart, ride my bicycle to the top of Mount Mitchell and back down to Walmart again, and then go home. That was an 80-mile ride. The one to Asheville and back is over 100, though.
Man, that is insane. I thought I was a crazy person. When I was a young kid, before JKV, my radio timed out and that shut down. You still there, Daniel?
KJ4WZM. I'm still here, Duncan.
Okay, that reminds me, when I was probably in 7th grade, 8th grade, I lived in southern Ohio, a place called Portsmouth, Ohio, and me and one of my friends did a 30-mile bike trip. They called it the flag. I guess it looks like a flag, and it's just a big square thing, and it's kind of dangerous, but since the bike trips you just described, it doesn't compare to that. Those are long distances. That's pretty cool. So you're just destined to be on the road.
Travel is one of my most favorite things to do ever. I've always been like that. When I was little, I used to be fascinated with how fast I could run, and then how far I could run, and I got on bicycles, and how fast and far I could go on them. I used to think it was pretty neat. I hit my early teen years, and I was teeny tiny. I grew late, really late, but I guess I was 12 years old and looked like an 8-year-old or whatever. I got on my dad's old 10-speed bike, and I could barely turn the pedals on it, but I got going down my street and reached 27, 28 miles an hour on that, and I thought that was a hoot, and it was, no pun intended, it was downhill from there. After that, I was out trying to be a speed demon all the time, trying to see how fast I could go on a bicycle, but I was pretty impressed that I could go as fast as the cars at that age.
Cool, and that reminds me of me, kind of, because I was kind of a late bloomer, and yeah, I always felt I was behind on everything, and but I got into music when I was in high school, and then when I got into college, I got into rock climbing. Because rock climbing, you don't got to talk to anybody except your partner. It's not a big social thing, and it's just you in the mountain. So yeah. That's cool. Cool to hear.
Eagle Rock in South Carolina?
Eagle Rock, but as far as rock climbing goes, I've climbed in Limbo Gorge and Looking Glass, but Table Rock, I've driven by it many times. Beautiful place. Back when I first moved to Asheville, back in about 95, 96, I used to install satellite dishes. So I'd install dishes in Walhalla and Seneca, all in the upstate North South Carolina. And yeah, I drive by that state park all the time. Beautiful place.
This KJ4WZM. I like to run the Table Rock Trail. And I like to go there really late in the day. That way I don't have as many people to deal with. But it takes me about 45 minutes each direction to run the trail. And that is blazing fast. It's normally a 3-hour hike each way, I think, something like that. It takes several hours to complete the hike for most people. But I like to run the trail real, real quick. It's about a half a mile elevation gain from bottom to top, and the trail is 3.8 miles long. But I like to go real quick on that, and then when I get to the top, I enjoy heights a lot, so I just sit up there and look at heights. I look at how high everything is, and it's just really peaceful to me. I've never been scared of heights at all, and I want to do hang gliding and stuff. But I like to go up there and look around.
Sounds good. Have you ever done any rock climbing?
Oh, I thought it would be neat, but I have not.
To back in the old days when I was young and virile, but now I'm, even though I've climbed some pretty intense cliffs, I'm afraid of heights now. I don't know what switched in my head, but now I can't even get to the edge of the cliff, even if there's a guardrail. But that's something to look into, or not, because it is kind of dangerous.
I'd rather do rock climbing or hang gliding. I think I'd rather do hang gliding than rock climbing. I almost feel like it's a little bit safer. Rock climbing, you might have your something cut loose, a strap cut loose, or where your anchor point was, something go wrong, and then you're going down a rock face. Hang gliding, things can go wrong with that, but the safety of the sport has come a long way in the past few decades, and hardly anybody ever dies or gets seriously injured doing it anymore because they've come so far with both the equipment and the safety features of the equipment and the training, and the safety training especially.
Yeah, that makes sense. When I was, I had some really bad accidents and falls when I was rock climbing. That's why I don't do it anymore, and that's why I'm probably still alive, because I decided to quit when I was ahead. And I did have a neighbor when I just moved to Asheville. He was into hang gliding, and he wanted to get me into hang gliding, and I just thought that was absolutely ludicrous. It was like, you're just going to take this big wings, strap it on, and then just run off this cliff and just hope everything goes good. It's like, I don't know. I think I'm just done with heights.
Me at all. I have flown planes before. My brother is almost done his pilot license. I wish he would finish it, but he has a problem with falling asleep. So he does. He, in a way, he doesn't want to go finish it because he doesn't want to die doing it. But I really, really like flying a whole bunch, and that's why I want to do it. I don't know. It's just I find it really relaxing, and I enjoy it a lot. It's like going up there and flying like the birds do. That's pretty neat. I can understand why some people would be scared to run off a cliff like that, but if you know what you're doing, sometimes it can actually work out okay. As far as the statistics go, it's actually safer to hang glide now than it is to drive cars now, especially in South Carolina. We have terrible, terrible drivers here. Worst state in the country. Most likely to die in while driving.
I have a childhood friend, his name's Jeff, and I haven't talked to him in decades, but I learned that he went on and got his pilot's license, and he doesn't fly commercial air. He does private, you know, flights. You know, there's a lot of jobs for pilots, and I just thought, if you like the hang gliding and you like, you know, traveling, you should just maybe get your pilot's license. They have courses at the airports, and they're not really that expensive. And I thought that'd be interesting, but me being 50 years old is probably not a good investment. But you're 27, just that's something to look into, because that's a cool job.
After I get my own truck, I'm gonna get the truck first, because that's really reliable income there, really, really good income at that. And after that, I'm going to use some of that money and buy an airplane and to fly. That is definitely in my plans. I like that kind of stuff. I love travel a whole bunch, both in the air and on land. And then someday get my scuba license, too. Boating doesn't interest me so much as scuba diving does. I could take boats or leave them. They don't really matter that much to me. But scuba diving would be really fun.
Sorry, one of my photography buddies, he had a friend that had an airplane, and he talked me into doing a trip from Asheville Airport down to Clemson. And we went up, and this pilot flew down, and then he said, "Hey, Ray, my friend, do you want to land the plane?" And I didn't know Ray could even fly. And he said, "Okay." And so we went down the first time, and the pilot had to interject and say, "Nope, pull back up. Let me let the repeater drop." And we went around again at the Clemson Airport in this little tiny little two-propeller Cessna or whatever. And then he comes down and he's like, "No, Ray, no, pull back up. And I was like, "Oh, goodness, we're going to die." And then the third time we come around and he landed it, but it was just, I wasn't expecting that. So anyway, that's just a quick story for humor. KU4JKB.
I have an Instagram account. It's actually my call sign. It's my Instagram account. And one of my very first pictures on there is of me flying an airplane and landing it at the downtown Greenville Airport. That was my first time in a plane, actually, but I had a flight simulator of the same plane, the Cessna 172, that I had practiced flying for a very long time. So when I finally got up there one day with a pilot, she had me land the plane. She's like, "Well, you said you have a flight, Sam. You said you're good at it. Now's your test. You can land the plane. Don't forget, you got a 20-mile-an-hour crosswind here, so you're going to have to compensate for that." She brought the plane into what's called a slip, where it kind of slides perpendicular through the air to lose airspeed and altitude. So she brought it in real fast, put it in a slip, and she's like, "Okay, here's the controls. Take it out of the slip and land it. I'm going to see how good you are." So I actually brought the plane down and landed it in the crosswind without crashing it. I landed all three tires at the same time, because that's how I done it on the flight sim, land all the tires at the same time. But it jerked the plane pretty. I didn't like drop the plane out of the sky or anything. I eased it on down, but I kept it level, and all three tires landed at the same time. And like that, from all those tires speeding up from 0 to 100 real quick. And she's like, "So, good job landing it on all three wheels, but actually, next time you do that, you need to land one tire at a time. That way it doesn't jerk the plane as hard, because you have to speed all those tires up when you go to land." So I was like, "Oh, okay, that makes sense." So, it's like if you're going 80 miles an hour down the highway and all of a sudden slam on the brakes for a split second. That's exactly what it felt like.
Sorry, and I didn't know you've flown a plane before, but just to go back to that flight from Asheville to Clemson, we flew right over Caesar's Head and you know, Lake Toxaway and all that stuff, and Table Rock, and he circled back to do, because I'm a photographer, and he wanted to give me good shots of Table Rock and all that stuff. But once we took off, and we were in this little plane, Ray, my fellow photographer, and the pilot, and I was in the back. And this plane was from the 70s or something. It still had cigarette ashtrays in it. And it was just like, I was looking out the windows like, wow, we're like in a Volkswagen Beetle flying in the air. And it was something else.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's like. It is like I think the plane that I flew was a 1978. And it was very much like having a car in the sky. It felt almost identical to being in a car, but in the sky. So instead of having two-dimensional steering, you have three-dimensional steering. But very, very, very similar. Extremely similar. Scary similar to driving. it was just odd to me, because like, you fly the flight simulator, it's like, oh, this is cool, whatever. Then you get in the sky, and it literally feels like you're driving a car through the air, and it's the strangest thing ever.
WD8RON.
RON, KJ4WZM.
To conversation for the last few minutes and enjoying it. I wanted to say something about your brother who falls asleep. You may have him check with the doctor for sleep apnea. It's one of the symptoms of falling asleep while driving. There are other symptoms. If he snores or if he's tired in the afternoon, it's one of the things to check on. It's extremely dangerous. For life insurance, for someone who has been diagnosed with this, the premium will double.
That's something he needs to look into. I've talked to him about that. Right now he's between jobs, so he's not going to go to a doctor or anything, but he knows that it's an issue, and we'll go and get that checked at some point. It does scare me a lot, knowing that he struggles in that area especially. So when he's driving on longer trips, I usually insist on talking to him on the phone to keep him awake. I don't struggle at all in any way falling asleep while driving, not in the slightest little bit. I do not get tired while I drive, at all. And he does. Very, very, very different situation there. It's just odd to me. It's not something that I understand, but I know that he struggles with it a lot.
Getting enough good sleep. There are a couple of kinds. One is a pilot where pilot falls down and blocks his breathing. The other is a brainwave type of thing called central apnea. But he definitely needs to get it checked out because it's extremely dangerous.
Yeah, and that's why he's not flying now, because he was having problems with that. So he himself chose to stop. And it saddened me, but I understand where he's coming from. Because for me, I always wanted to go get my pilot license. So I was like, come on, dude, why don't you just get it? He's like, nope, I'm not going to do it because I don't want to die like that. He said, I love flying, but until I can get this fixed, figure out what's going on and get it fixed, I am not ever going back up in the air again. At one point, well, he's always had aviation-type jobs. But at one point when he was done his work days, he would go up with this boss man and shuttle parts for BMW for a few hours at night. He'd go up there after work, fly to Michigan, and come back with a run of last-minute parts for BMW. And he used to do that a lot, but he said that he could just not stay awake, so he stopped doing that.
The doctor can also give him some medicine to take called Provigil that may help that also. But I'm going to drop out of here. I just wanted to kick that in because I've got sleep apnea and I know what it's done to me. And I'm using what's called a CPAP, a constant pressure machine, and that definitely made a huge difference.
I'll definitely talk to him about that. You see, your call sign is WD8RON, is that correct?
That's correct. Whiskey Delta 8, Romeo Oscar November. I'm about halfway between Brevard and Roslyn.
You checked in with me once the other night. I think it was last week when I called the net on Friday night. Thanks for hopping in there.
But I'm dropping out. I've got something going on the computer. Thanks a lot. Out.
TWD8RON, KJ4WZM. KO4JKV, Duncan, are you still around?
4JKV, still hanging around.
I'm back.
And I heard that you were like, no way I'm going to get my pilot's license. I want to die. And that is, a good philosophy. But, you know, I guess it depends on what type of plane you're flying, because if you're driving a plane that's well maintained, as opposed to something that's just, you know, leaking oil, it's a big thing, so you never know what you're getting into, but it sounds like an exciting hobby. And that's something you want to get into now if you're interested instead of being 35 or 45.